case for argument this morning is United States against Chapa. Mr. Garcia.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mario Garcia for the appellant Jacinto Chapa. This is a direct appeal from the United States District Court, Southern District of Indiana, Indianapolis Division. Mr. Chapa is seeking to have his conviction vacated and his plea agreement and guilty plea withdrawn on several grounds. First, that it was not knowingly involuntarily made, that it was not made with knowledge of the likely consequences for his plea of guilty, and that as a result, his Sixth Amendment right to due process was violated when he gave up his right to trial by jury. Mr. Chapa was convicted of conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute 1,000 kilograms or more of marijuana. His conviction came after he had entered into a written plea agreement, which was accepted by the court. The plea agreement called for Mr. Chapa to receive, if he was eligible, a safety valve or the opportunity to be sentenced below the mandatory minimum of 240 months. Mr. Chapa was required to disclose his involvement in the criminal activity and to be debriefed, which he was. He met with agents of the government and the Drug Enforcement Agency and fully disclosed his involvement in this matter. Only after he submitted to this debriefing and only after the court had accepted his plea agreement did both he, his attorney, and the assistant U.S. attorney learn that contrary to their beliefs and opinions, he was in fact not eligible for safety valve. The ineligibility arose from two misdemeanor convictions for driving while suspended in the state of Texas. In each of those convictions, Mr. Chapa received more than 30 days in jail. And the guidelines provide that a misdemeanor conviction for an act like driving while suspended, in which a defendant receives more than 30 days, counts as one criminal history point. So with two criminal history points for those driving while suspended convictions, plus a point relating to a driving while intoxicated, Mr. Chapa was in Category 2 for criminal history and thus not eligible for safety valve. Mr. Chapa's plea was not voluntarily made, despite his representations at the plea hearing to the contrary. We believe Mr. Chapa believes that he was induced or enticed by the possibility of obtaining safety valve.
Well, that, Mr. Garcia, that happens all the time, right? I mean, there wasn't anything in the plea agreement that guaranteed him the safety valve, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And if I recall correctly, the plea agreement left open the question of his criminal history to be resolved later in the proceedings, right?
It did. As Your Honor is well aware, this was a standard written plea agreement. Absolutely. And it provided that if he was eligible, he would get it. And what I would submit to the court was Mr. Chapa had his own attorney, Mr. Bratton, telling him he was eligible. He had the U.S. Assistant attorney who was supporting that eligibility, which the government acknowledges was a mistake. And although the court did acknowledge and in fact expressly written in the plea agreement, it says that it's contingent upon his eligibility, I think everyone went into the plea agreement and everyone went into the debriefing and disclosure with the assumption and the belief that he was eligible.
Did he ever move to withdraw his guilty plea?
He did not, Your Honor.
How does that affect this appeal?
Your Honor, I believe he can challenge that the validity of the guilty plea on direct appeal and that he wasn't required at the district court to move to withdraw the plea.
Do we review for plain error?
Correct, Your Honor. Plain error is the standard of review.
At what point was the mistake with regard to the safety valve being available brought to the attention of the district court judge?
Your Honor, it was brought by way of an objection to the pre-sentence investigation report. Originally, we filed an objection once the PSI came out and said that Mr. Chapa was not eligible. We filed an objection on the grounds that the Rule 16 disclosures by the government were not adequate to put counsel and Mr. Chappell on notice that he was not eligible. After reviewing the over 500 pages of documents and the Rule 16 disclosure regarding his criminal history, we acknowledge, in fact, that we had received notice of those prior convictions, but they were a little bit ambiguous. And you know, again, there was a mistake made at the outset that he was eligible.
Did the objection that was filed to the PSR with regard to the issue, it sounds as if it just went to disclosure by the government, as opposed to advising with regard to the discussions between the AUSA and the defense counsel as to their mutual mistake regarding the calculation for the safety valve. Would that be correct?
That would be correct, Your
Honor. So the judge was never advised through the objections that there was that side issue, that side agreement, as the defense is arguing.
I believe at sentencing that issue was raised, Your Honor, by Mr. Bratton to the court, Mr. Bratton advised the court that both parties had gone into all of this process and these affirmative actions by Mr. Chappa to disclose based on the belief and opinion that he was eligible. And only after the probation officer had calculated the criminal history points did everyone learn that he wasn't eligible.
This is kind of unusual. You had an 851 information in this?
We did have an 851, Your Honor. Only, and here's the rub, I've not been practicing as long as Mr. Bratton, but we have never seen a situation where a charge that leads to an 851 doesn't count towards criminal history points for purposes of safety valve, and that was exactly the situation here. The conviction that resulted in the 851 was greater than 10 years old, so it didn't count towards the criminal history points. And I think everyone glossed over the misdemeanors in Texas for driving while suspended, because, again, in our situation, we had never seen a misdemeanor for driving while suspended result in a criminal history point, especially two, one for each of these situations, which then made him ineligible. With respect to sufficient knowledge of the likely consequences, again, as the court has recognized, there was some contingency with respect to the eligibility of safety valve, but when you look at the totality of circumstances, from Mr. Chappa's position, it wasn't likely that he was going to be ineligible. When he had the professional opinion of Mr. Bratton, he had the supporting opinion of the assistant U.S. attorney, both implying to him and enticing to him that he was eligible for safety valve. He didn't believe it was very likely he was going to get the mandatory minimum of 240 months. And in this case, by affirmatively debriefing with the DEA, he cut his presumed sentence in half from 240 months to 97 to 121 months if you look at the guidelines notwithstanding the ineligibility of safety valve. Because of the
I'm just concerned if the court were to accept the argument that you're making to it, that this kind of plea agreement should be set aside at this point. I'm just wondering what a district court judge has to do in taking a change of plea and in conducting the colloquy with the defendant in questioning as to the terms of a plea agreement. It would seem to me that if the court accepts your argument and holds in favor of your client here, it's going to become incumbent on the district court judge to dig deeper back into the background of a case in every instance to find out whether or not there's some side agreement that's been worked out between defense counsel and an AUSA, say in the instance as here with regard to safety valve eligibility, that defendant is relying upon, although not articulating directly because it's not a clear provision in the plea agreement. So I'm just wondering, where does that leave the district court in digging through or going past the clear terms of the plea agreement to find out if this kind of side agreement exists or goes on?
Yeah, I think Your Honor addresses or identifies that problem, and I would say this. One, that yes, the district court may want to, in light of this case, take extra steps to ensure that everyone has thoroughly looked into the matter. But even more importantly, I think, perhaps at the plea stage, that the court take the plea agreement under advisement, allow PSI to be prepared, and then if all of the terms and all of the side agreements and all of the beliefs and opinions appear to have been, you know, met, then accept the plea agreement, then accept the defendant's confession, then allow the defendant perhaps to be debriefed, so everyone's on board with exactly what the situation is going to be when it goes to sentencing.
But rather having the district court judge, you know, chase rabbits across the field and trying to figure out what side or secret agreements there might be, wouldn't it be better to make it incumbent either on the AUSA or the defense counsel to bring it to the attention of the court at the time or before the plea agreement, that there is some kind of contingency that's not directly set out in the plea agreement, and therefore the court can inquire on it, or just postpone taking the plea until such time as maybe a preliminary pre-sentence report on the issue of safety valve eligibility might be prepared so that the parties are fully informed of whether or not that defendant is going to qualify for it before the plea is taken.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Your Honor. Something along the lines of a preliminary pre-sentence investigation report, and I think Mr. Bratton probably should have emphasized to the court a little bit more that, you know, Your Honor, we believe both sides believe Mr. Chappett is eligible, and we're going into this position believing that he is eligible.
And how do we reconcile what you're telling us with paragraph 11C of the plea agreement, which was the subject of the colloquy, and says the parties agree the defendant has met the fifth prong under the safety valve, 5C1.2, that he has truthfully disclosed to the government all information and evidence he has concerning the offense. Defendant understands that if he does not qualify for 5C1.2, defendant will be subject to a statutory mandatory minimum sentence.
Judge, he said it
in writing. He signed it. He had advice of counsel as he did so. He reaffirmed that in front of the district judge. What more can be done?
Your Honor, I think in light of the totality of the circumstances, again, the overwhelming weight in this case being the advice he's getting from his attorney, the support of the assistant U.S. attorney, and then the one sentence in the 11, you know, C paragraph saying, but there is a chance you might not be eligible. I think in light of that overwhelming support to the contrary, the totality indicates it wasn't voluntary. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Blackington.
Good morning. May it please the court. Of course, as the court's noted, the plain error standard applies in this case. The first thing I'd like to address in response to the argument of the appellant in this case is that there was no side agreement, no evidence of any side agreement. There's a difference between two attorneys talking before a proceeding and saying, look, in my opinion, he's safety valve eligible, but we've got to wait to see what the pre-sentence report says, and a side deal saying, yes, we're both going to go into this, saying that he's safety valve eligible. And in fact, the facts of the case are the plea agreement is entirely conditional. It says, in essence, if he's eligible for the safety valve, he gets it. If he's not eligible, he doesn't. That framework continued with the court's colloquy at the change of plea hearing. The colloquy was fully compliant with the provisions of Rule 11, and the court specifically advised the defendant that a 20-year mandatory minimum sentence applied and that would supersede any type of guidelines calculation unless there was the safety valve. And furthermore, when the court asked the defendant, are there any other agreements outside of this plea agreement, the defendant said no. So it's very clear that we don't have a side agreement in this case that the U.S. Attorney's Office or anybody else violated. And as Judge Hamilton had inquired into in his questioning earlier of the appellant's counsel, these types of discussions happen all of the time in the real world. You know, do we think he's safety valve eligible or not? Do we think he's Category 3 or 4? And if the court were to be required to delve into all of those not side agreements, but discussions and opinions that counsel might have had, were really going down a pretty treacherous road.
But isn't it true that in fairness, in negotiations or discussions between an AUSA and a defense attorney, where they are both discussing, for instance, a safety valve eligibility issue, and they're not certain of it, shouldn't it be incumbent on both of them equally to bring that to the attention of the trial judge before the matter goes far as this one did? That is, shouldn't he have been made aware of it at the time of the change of plea or beforehand? Again, to entertain possibly getting that safety valve eligibility determined before the parties went forward.
Yeah, I think in this...
agreeing to a plea.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, before agreeing to the terms of the plea agreement and the defendant entering his guilty plea.
There are cases I've had in front of this judge, in particularly, not concerning the safety valve, but the career offender provisions and things, where a motion's actually been filed before the district court and asking the probation office to prepare a criminal history report. And that's the type of thing that would have certainly helped things along here. But again, the key thing is...
Would it be helpful to have that become kind of standard operating procedure then, when both sides agree they're not certain on whether or not there would be safety valve eligibility, so that a case doesn't evolve as far as this one has?
I think to do so, it would require a modification of our local rules of criminal procedure, but that's not...
Isn't that just civility to disclose it for when the attorneys are discussing a matter like this, to mutually agree to bring it to the attention of the trial judge so that he can determine whether and how it's appropriate to deal with it?
Well, I don't know that there's necessarily incivility by not doing
maybe
that.
Maybe that's not the best word, but just kind of a candid approach to a potential problem in a case before it blows up like this one.
Well, I think the candid approach is putting into the plea agreement, look, we don't know if he's safety valve eligible or not. If he is, he is. If he isn't, he isn't. And as this court said in many times, that the validity of a plea agreement is not about bargaining for a specific sentence or a sentencing outcome. It's about whether the defendant understands the nature of the charges, his rights, and possible penalties and so forth. And that was done here. And in addition, once the pre-sentence report was prepared, the defense counsel had the opportunity to move to withdraw the plea, and he didn't. And nothing was done on that nature. He didn't do it. And instead, there was this sort of weird objection about discovery, when in fact full discovery concerning the defendant's prior record had been prepared. So what we're addressing here is the question of not whether maybe the local rules of procedure should be modified, but whether the plea was knowing, intelligent, and voluntary. And in this case, it was, because both the plea agreement was clear. There was no agreement about whether he was safety valve eligible. And the judge asked the defendant all of the pertinent questions about understanding the nature of the charges and the penalty, and that's so that the plea is, in this case, knowing, intelligent, and voluntary. And it might not have been the type of sentence that the defendant expected. You know, these types of plea proceedings are fraught with all kinds of issues. I've had numerous experiences in the 11 years of doing this where you negotiate a plea agreement with the defendant, and all of a sudden the defendant's robbery conviction comes in that the government didn't know about, that the defense lawyer didn't know about. And to address the court's concern, the way to address the court's concern is not to require of the court to, in negotiating the plea and determining if it's knowing, intelligent, and voluntary, to ask all these questions. Now, if the lawyers talk to you about what you expect and that type of thing. But if the court wanted to do something to make sure the defendant knew exactly what his record was and the guidelines, the rules of procedure would have to be changed to require some sort of preliminary pre-sentence report before someone enters a plea. And I don't think we're here in that posture.
Mr. Blackington, in your brief, you also argued we ought to just dismiss this case because of the appeal waiver in the plea agreement.
Yes, and I think that issue turns around in whether the plea is knowing, intelligent, and voluntary. You can't have a valid appellate waiver if the plea is not knowing, intelligent, and voluntary. So it's sort of a circular argument.
So we don't have a separate reason.
It is a separate reason, Your Honor, but I think the court has to reach the same it's dependent on the same factual finding that under the plain error standard, the plea was knowing, intelligent, and voluntary. Different reason, same factual findings necessary.
But in your view, the correct disposition should be dismissal?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't have anything else unless the court has any further questions of me. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Garcia. We appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and your service to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement.